The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm thoroughly pleased to have Louise Penny on the phone. She joins us on the telephone up in, where are you, Quebec?
I am in Quebec, yes. Hi, Vic.
Hi, Louise. And a better man than me could never get three interviews in a row with you, but here I am.
You're the best man. I took a picture when I was pre-signing a whole bunch of books. I was lying on top of them, and my assistant did point out that I was lying on top of a better man. I wished was true.
I guess we better let our listeners in on the little joke that we're making.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They may not realize. The book is called, my next book is called A Better Man.
Okay, there we go. They're all very relieved now.
Yes, something would have gone very wrong with your show.
Well, sometimes it does, and that's okay because we go where it takes us. Louise, what is this, number 15?
It is, yes.
And we probably have half a dozen people out there who have never heard of you and they've never heard of this series. So I guess we better tell them, first of all, who are you?
Well, I am Louise Penny. I live in Quebec. I write about Quebec. I write essentially about the place where I live. And they're crime novels. And I, I'm middle-aged, happy. I'm not sure what else people need to know about me. Although I am always happy to talk about me, of course.
Oh, good.
It's fascinating.
Well, these books are set in large part in a remote village in Quebec, which I'm guessing is maybe a little bit like where you live. Tell us about the village and who lives there and who are these people?
The village is called Three Pines. It's fictional, very, very much fictional. It's inspired by the place I live, inspired by other places as well. It is small. It has a village green. It came about after 9/11, where even as a Canadian, I was shattered, although I understand that I could never have been as affected as an American. What was shattered was my sense of safety, that even living in a small village in Quebec, no place is safe anymore. And so I was feeling very vulnerable, like many people. And I started to write about a place where I would feel safe, and not physically safe, because we can never guarantee that. You never know, and that's what 9/11 made clear, and other subsequent events, including the shootings that are happening all over the place, that you just aren't safe anywhere. But in Three Pines, while not necessarily physically safe, you are emotionally safe, and that's really what the book is about. It's about community. It's about our yearning to belong. It's about friendship, about love in all its forms. It's about what happens to good and well-intentioned people when terrible things happen. And they're not all, you know, we don't all react the way we would like to react.
Hmm. My guest is Louise Penny, and her new one is A Better Man. Let's talk about your protagonist. He's quite a guy.
Yes, Armand Gamache. He is Francophone. Quebec, as you probably know, and your listeners probably know, is mostly French, and he is himself French, a Québécois, and he is the head of homicide for the Sûreté du Québec, which is the provincial police, which would be the equivalent of your state police. And, I read crime novels, which is why I decided to write one. But I had no idea what the tropes were, if there were any rules. I had no idea what they were. And so it ended up being fairly unusual. My main character Gamache is a decent human being. He is a man of integrity, of personal courage. He's not perfect. He has flaws, but he is doing his best. He, despite the fact, and perhaps because of the fact, that he's surrounded by such horrific events, he also sees goodness in the world, and he understands how precious life is. So he's an interesting person to write. There are a lot of people thought after the first two that he'd grow boring because decent people are boring. And I think, how cynical can you be? What's happened to the world where being decent is boring? I think it is much harder and a much greater challenge to be a decent human being. It's so easy to be cynical, to be negative, to find flaws. It takes a lot more courage to see those flaws, but to choose to be decent and kind.
Mm. You definitely defy the stereotypes of the genre. You have this police officer who's in this wonderful marriage. He's so happily married. They have such a great relationship, and it's a very comforting thing. It almost makes it feel like a cozy mystery. But then you've got the duck, which kind of, I think, throws us off the cozy a little bit.
The duck?
The duck.
Yeah, these aren't cozy.
No,
that is
no.
The most, and as you said, that's the most superficial view of them. And I'm not really sure why anyone would interpret people living in a rural area as being less complex than people living in a city, or someone living in having a good marriage as less complex than people who are, who's afraid of Virginia Woolf. Again, it takes a lot more work, a lot more self-awareness to be in a good marriage, as I know and as I hope your listeners know, than to just throw in the towel. The duck is a symbol. The duck is an allegory, as is most of the books, most of the things that happen in the books. Three Pines itself is an allegory. There's a kind of a magical realism intentionally about it. It's only ever found by people who are lost. It's not on any map. As Herman Melville said in Moby Dick, which is a book I quote a lot in A Better Man, though I don't use this quote, but he said that it's not down in any map. True places never are. And Three Pines is a true place. Now, the duck was not planned. The duck is bonded with an elderly woman in the village, an embittered, often drunk, perhaps demented old poet who's very much a loner. But she takes the duck home and nurses it, and she bonds with it, and it bonds with her. But they both have foul language. But again, it's about love. I mean, it's about a lot of things. It's about humor, and it's, you know, there's I hope that people laugh as they read the books as well as feel things deeply. Mm-hmm. Because that's what life is as well, isn't it? I remember laughing at my mother's funeral, not at the funeral, but something happened in the funeral, and I laughed and I felt badly about it until I realized that that's life. We're such complex beings. We're capable of feeling contradictory emotions and strong ones at the same time. So Ruth's relationship with the duck, and then other people's relationship with the duck, which is more fraught, is really about love and all the forms it takes. Anyone who's had any sort of pet understands how bonded we are to them. And I chose a duck on purpose because it's unusual. It challenges people to not simply laugh and be dismissive, but to think about that relationship.
Louise Penny joins us. Her new one is A Better Man. We open the page, and it's the 15th book, so life has gone on. Lots of things have happened. Many adventures have been had. How do we go into this and let listeners know how it opens and a little bit about what the story is about without having to read the other 14 books?
Well, you've hit on one of the big challenges. of writing a series that uses essentially the same characters, pretty much the same core group, and pretty much the same location, is how do you make every book different? And you do it by having different themes, exploring different themes. I mean, murder itself isn't a theme. It's an act. And to spend, I spend a year writing a book. It would not interest me at all to spend an entire year writing about a murder. What I want to do is write about the themes that that murder provokes. So this is about truth. The quote that I use from Moby Dick quite a bit is all truth with malice in it. Mm. And how easy it is to overlook the truth and focus on the malice, but how important it is to hear both the things that we get wrong, the misunderstandings that happen. So this book, without giving too much away because it's really on the first page, is that Gamache, who had been the head of the entire Sûreté du Québec, and then was investigated after a particularly brutal raid and suspended, was demoted, offered his old job back as head of homicide. The people who were looking into him, mostly the politicians, thought that he would never agree. It was a panacea. They were throwing him a crumb. It was made to look good to the rank and file, to anyone who questioned it, that he was offered a job, but he refused. And much to their shock, he actually accepted it. So now he's back, and he's actually investigating the disappearance of a young woman who happens to be the same age as his daughter. And so he's struggling with not falling over the edge into empathizing too much with the father of this missing daughter. But it's a battle he is losing.
And we also, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, have this odd situation where Gamache is suddenly working at a lower rank than his son-in-law, who formerly was below Gamache. And it also makes us wonder, as we open the story, whether you're writing his son-in-law out of the series.
I mean, I can't answer that. I really want people to read the full book and see what happens at the end and then read the next book. But it's a very special. As I said, the books really are about love and the main relationship, loving relationship in the book, despite the one that's, you know, clearly Gamache and his wife are in love. He loves his children. He has a great relationship with all of his colleagues. There are other couples in the Gup book. But the main loving relationship is between Gamache and his second-in-command, Jean-Guy Beauvoir. It's very much a father-son, mentor-mentee relationship. So yes, it was really interesting for me to explore what would happen if Gamache, who had always been in charge and been Jean-Guy's mentor, is, as you said, subordinate to Jean-Guy, at least in this book, until Jean-Guy leaves and takes a job in Paris. So that was interesting to follow. It was interesting to see also the other Sûreté du Québec officers being a little worried about how this was going to work out.
I wasn't trying to give away anything about what you're doing with Jean-Guy, about writing him out of the series. We just wonder at the beginning, because we hear he's taken this job in Paris, and we're wondering, well, how's this going to work? How does she keep him in the series? And, of course, the way you twist and turn throughout the story, at times we're wondering whether Jean-Guy is going to live through the book or even whether Gamache is going to survive. We just don't know with you, Louise.
Well, that's an interesting point, and that was important to me, too, is that it's so easy to become formulaic and as a result, of course, predictable. And I didn't want to do that. I don't want to do that. It wouldn't interest me at all. And while I think some readers want essentially the same thing over and over, I know that they too would grow weary of the same thing. So I had to establish fairly early on in the series that no character is sacrosanct. Uh-huh. That anything can happen to these characters, even the ones we know well and have grown to love. And in fact, terrible things have happened to them. So yes, you know, something could happen to Gamache, to Jean-Guy, to any of them.
The book is A Better Man. Louise Penny joins us on the telephone in Quebec. And I love your books because, well, in this one, for instance, I'm getting near the end and I'm got, okay, I guessed it. I guessed who did it. And all through the book, Gamache is like, this person did it, or this person did it, or this person did it. And finally, when I was sure that I was right, I was positive I knew who did it. You yanked it right out from under me. And that's like, I was wrong. I was
yes.
Like, oh, you love that, don't you? You love those twists.
That's also a hard thing to do because I know so well, obviously, who did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to tell as I am not so much the first draft, but the second or third or fourth draft, whether I'm being too obvious, whether I'm not being obvious enough, because I do want, if people go back and reread the book, knowing now who did do it, that they could say, oh, gosh, here was that clue, or, oh, my God, how did I miss that? Mm-hmm. Or it's clear at that point. So you're playing fair with them while also having these the red herrings.
You mentioned that you have themes in each book which are separate from homicide that keep you interested in writing the stories. And I guess if I had to pick one that I think might be your theme in this one, it would be women who are abused.
Yes. Yes, it's kind of abuse on a broad scale, the abuse of social media. Gamache and the character assassination that is taking place on social media. Clara, one of the main characters, a successful artist whose latest show may or may not be her best, but for some reason the wolves are out after her on social media and absolutely mauling her, eviscerating her, and how painful that is. But then there's the issue of domestic violence, yes, that plays a big role in this.
You dive headfirst into the social media in this one, and I was intrigued by that. I myself try to keep clear of most social media. I only look at Twitter, and I try to do it very carefully and not look at it too much. I looked at it today. I wondered, does Louise have a Twitter account? And I couldn't find one. Even though you're mentioned on there quite a bit, someone I follow on Twitter, Hope Dellen, talked about you today.
Uh-huh. Hope, she says, oh, Hope Dellen, one of my favorite people. She was my editor for many, many years at my U.S. editor, and the main editor, the one who did the editorial notes. She's become a huge friend. She's on leave now, and, mm-hmm. and I miss her horribly, but we've remained good friends. Yeah, Hope Dellen. She's very clever, too.
I had to wonder, you know so much about social media, but is it merely from observing? I'm guessing that you're not a participant particularly. Am I wrong?
I have Facebook.
Okay.
I do Facebook. I'm not sure. Is that considered social media?
Oh, that's probably the biggest one.
Yes. But not Twitter. Although every now and then I ask, because my friends, who are writers, and very successful ones, are on Twitter. And so when we get together, I'm always asking them, like, should I? I mean, what is it? And they're tweeting photographs, and we're at this event, and it always seems so immediate and exciting, and I sometimes feel like I'm missing something, but I just can't. I'm very private, despite, mm-hmm. you know, being on Facebook. I can't imagine that. I'm private, and at the same time, I don't think my life is that interesting. So there would be like months when I don't tweet because all I'm doing is eating gummy bears and writing and watching HGTV. So uh-huh. How long can you tweet about that? And I don't want to be talking about politics, and there are other venues for that, although I do sometimes.
Well, you've hit on the one main reason why I'm on Twitter. It's because, as you noted, there are so many writers on there. But
yes.
but I have noticed that the ones who actually write will disappear for long periods of time, and that's
yeah,
understood.
I think there's a reason there's no reality television show following writers. We're either completely antisocial and are drunk and naked most of the time, or I do find it really upsetting that the creative process and doing nothing look exactly alike.
Mm-hmm.
We're just staring into space.
Good point. I'll use that as an explanation the next time I'm accused of doing nothing. Louise Penny is my guest. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. Louise joins us on the telephone in Quebec, and as we're recording this, her new novel, A Better Man, is just about ready to come out, but it hasn't come out yet. I'm guessing they're going to send you on a book tour in the U.S., are they?
Yes. And normally my book tours, my previous book, Kingdom of the Blind, came out. We changed the pub date because I was going to take a year off. And then didn't, but I was late in delivering the previous book, Kingdom of the Blind, so we changed the pub date to November, but then for A Better Man, we moved it back. So the November tour was actually quite long, a couple of weeks, but they're exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked if they minded maybe spreading it out a bit. So this immediate tour is slightly less than a week, but then it goes on through the fall.
I know you're a private person. Were you taking a year off just to kind of rest?
It was after, and I did talk about this because Michael felt it was important, and so did I, that my husband had been diagnosed with dementia. He was a doctor, the head of hematology at the Montreal Children's. Brilliant, brilliant man. But he developed dementia. And we discussed it, and he felt strongly that he wanted to be public about it, to not be the mad uncle in the attic, the madman in the attic that nobody talked about. He wasn't ashamed of it. He wasn't even afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was. Not ashamed. I was afraid. But we got through it, or at least I did.
Yeah.
He eventually passed away. In 2016, September 18th, 2016. And so that's why I took a year off after.
Uh-huh.
I was able to, I was so fortunate to be younger than him, to work from home, to have the income, the financial support, and to live in a village where I also had the emotional support. So everything was working in our favor. And it was still, it still brought me to my knees. I don't know how people do it.
Mm.
So part of what I feel strongly about doing now is raising money for dementia support groups and talking about it. So that's why I took a year off. I just felt I was drained. Michael was very much the inspiration for Gamache, so I thought it would just be too sad, too painful to talk about, to write about Gamache when Michael wasn't around anymore. As it turns out, it was oddly enough, perhaps not all that odd actually, is that it was a great solace.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that Michael is immortal.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I think it was our former president, Ronald Reagan, and his wife, Nancy, who were instrumental in bringing attention to these kinds of issues. And
very much.
I admired him for that. And I think another one of our former presidents just published a reading list, and Bill Clinton said he loved your last book.
Ah.
Did you see that on Twitter, Louise? You probably didn't see that.
No, I didn't.
Did you know that?
No. Well, I actually did, actually. Well, I didn't know that he had mentioned it, so
yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But we're friends. That was one of the unexpected byproducts. And, oh my gosh, Michael was such a fan of the Clintons, especially Hillary. And he died, perhaps not such a bad thing, just before the election, because I think that would have killed him.
Oh my.
But I ended up meeting them and becoming friends, and he would have so loved that. But yes, that was one of the unexpected benefits of a writing career. The people you get to meet, both famous and most of my closest friends now aren't famous at all, but I've met them through writing.
Mm. Well, this new book, A Better Man, you certainly had me twisting and turning right to the very end. And you also have some fun with cell phones in this one. You play some tricks with cell phones and the whole media thing with the edited videos. And I thought that was fascinating. I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Thank you. Thank you. These aren't, as you know, these are very much character-driven. So part of the challenge I have now, and I'm not a complete Luddite, but I'm not a techie, and I don't want the books to what for me and for this series would be degenerate into a kind of a police procedural where all they have to do is track someone's movements going from tower to tower, and that would make it a short story anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to figure out, it's something I'm not sure I've got down yet, but I struggle with trying to figure out how much social media, how much technology that exists now should I bring into the books, just for reality's sake, because they're not set in the 1980s, they're set in the present.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Hope was your editor, and I'm wondering, with the success and the influence that you've gotten with these books, has the editorial process changed at all for you? Do they pretty much leave you be, or how does that work for you? With someone who's had like two number ones in a row or three in a row, I can't remember, but you hit the top of the bestseller list, do the editors kind of leave you alone after that, or is it still the same process?
No, it's pretty much the same process. What they don't do, and never have done to their credit, is tell me what the stories should be about before I start writing. They have never, ever said, you know, shouldn't you set a book in Prague, or don't kill this person, or maybe you should explore the themes of, you know, obesity or whatever. They just let me write. I hand in the book that I needed to write. But the editorial process itself is rigorous. They're always very nice because they know that they're dealing with someone very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
They always say, "Oh, we loved it. It was fantastic." And then they send me like 20 pages of notes.
Uh-huh.
I rail, I rant, I curl up into a little ball and curse them all. They must die because, of course, they've clearly missed the point of the whole thing. And then after a while, a few days, I take a shower and take another look at the notes, and some I agree with, many I agree with, many are small, some are more significant, and we work together and work it out. It's an interesting process where you have to be both an individual athlete and a team player.
Mm.
And it's very important to respect the team because we all want the same thing, which isn't to say, again, that you agree with everything. We've had some real, Hope and I in particular, some real knock-em-down, drag-em-out fights. But we respect each other and I think come to the best decision in the end. But I think that can often be, and again, something I'm aware of and hope I always will be aware of, is that with success can come a certain hubris. And I think that is the beginning of the end of a series.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to comment on any other writers who have developed a sense of hubris. I'm going to leave that one alone.
Oh, come on. But, come on, Vic. Name some names.
No. Louise, it's always so fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.
It's great to talk to you. I always enjoy it.
My guest has been Louise Penny. Her book is A Better Man. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.